Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. Jill Robbins tells us how the U.S. military is preparing for the inauguration, or swearing-in, of Donald Trump as the 45th American president later this month. Alice Bryant will tell us about the tens of thousands of Americans who are traveling to other countries every year for medical care. Phil Dierking reports on a decision by President Barack Obama to declare most of the U.S. waters in the Arctic Ocean and some areas in the Atlantic Ocean permanently unavailable to oil and gas drilling. Brian Lynn will tell us about a dispute between the ride-sharing company Uber and officials in California that has led the company to remove its self-driving cars from the streets of San Francisco. And in our weekly Health and Lifestyles report, correspondent Ana Mateo will tell us about new research that finds sunshine can help women with breast cancer live longer. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today, so let's get started.
In the United States, the inauguration of a new president is one of the nation's biggest ceremonies. Military officials plan the event using a 12 by 18 meter map of Washington, D.C. The map is so big, it is shown in a large building called the D.C. Armory. Officials from across the country gathered at the Armory to plan the 58th presidential inauguration. Lucas Hernandez is part of that group. He works for the United States Marine Corps.
It's a lot of moving parts. You know, we've got a fairly condensed space where we're working on the Capitol grounds and a fairly short amount of time where we have to get all of these events done and completed in basically what's a no-fail mission that day.
Aaron Lovely works for the United States Army. He says he looks forward to working with other parts of the government on the event.
We're actually thrilled as a military to have the cooperative partnerships of the other federal agencies that we get to work with in the city because we're moving a lot of people through a lot of people.
Malik Freeman, who also works for the U.S. Army, says soldiers from all over the country will take part.
We have almost up to 7,000 to 8,000 soldiers coming from 40 states, so we have to ensure that we get them here, move them forward to their mission site, perform their mission on Inauguration Day, and get them back home within that 72-hour window.
The weather also can be a concern. It is almost always very cold in Washington in January. Michelle Watson, who works for the Coast Guard, says that means planners must ensure that troops are not outside for very long.
So it's kind of, you don't want to keep the military members out there longer than they have to be.
Inauguration Day is Friday, January 20th. Because of the disputed election, officials are planning for a complex inauguration and many protesters. They know their plans may change during the day. Thousands of members of the National Guard will be given the power to detain any protesters who break the law. One of the largest crowds gathered to attend President Obama's first inauguration in 2009. But officials say the troops did not make any arrests that year. Major General Bradley Becker is the commanding general of the Joint Force Headquarters, National Capital Region. He says the biggest concern for organizers is the number of possible protesters. More than 12 protest marches are planned during the weekend following the inauguration. On one group's Facebook page, about 150,000 people have said they will be protesting. About 240,000 have said they are interested in doing so. Many groups also are expected to come to Washington to support the new President Donald Trump. One of them is called Bikers for Trump. They have planned gatherings throughout the country in the weeks before the inauguration. They also plan to ride their motorcycles through the city on Inauguration Day. Stephen Fuller is a professor and faculty chair at the Center for Regional Analysis at George Mason University. He believes at least 200,000 people will attend inaugural events. And he says as many as 1 million protesters may come to the city on the day Trump takes office or the day after. Fuller says local and federal officials will be able to deal with the large number of protesters. He says one of the biggest security difficulties of the day will be guarding the president-elect. By comparison, guarding the protesters will be much easier, Fuller says. I'm Jill Robbins.
Million people worldwide travel to other countries for low-cost medical treatment. This kind of travel is known as medical tourism. Experts say people spend hundreds of billions of dollars on medical tourism every year. And experts predict the industry will grow by up to 25% a year over the next 10 years. Visa and Oxford Economics recently studied medical tourism trends. The study found that such travel is increasing because of the rising cost of medical treatments, the aging of societies, and advances in international transportation. About 340 new international airports will be built in the next 10 years, Visa says. A company called MedRepublic is connecting doctors with people around the world who need medical care. Robert Page founded the company. Our software allows patients to use our website so they can search for doctors directly and talk to them, he said. Page says the top country for medical tourism is Thailand. The United States is second. He says the United States is a country with a level of specialized medicine not found elsewhere. The recent Visa study says the United States was the top destination for medical tourism, not Thailand. It also found an increasing number of people are traveling to Singapore, Germany, Korea, Spain, Britain, Canada, and Israel for medical care. The visa report predicts China will become the top destination within the next 10 years. Between 750,000 and 1.8 million Americans leave the country for medical reasons every year because of the high costs of treatments and surgeries. Page says Mexico is a common choice for American medical tourists. For Americans, the main destination is Mexico due to its geographical proximity and the relationship between both countries. The main reason is treatment for cancer, he said. Many Americans also travel to other countries for plastic surgery, dental surgery, gastric bypasses, and orthopedic surgeries. Susie Pozo was a medical tourist. 4 years ago, she traveled to Mexico for stomach surgery. I used to weigh 194 pounds or 88 kilograms. I had many health issues. It's very expensive in the U.S. I was worried because of the security in Puerto Vallarta, but 4 years ago, I made the best decision of my life. I traveled to Mexico and had stomach surgery at the Puerto Vallarta Hospital. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns that there are risks connected to less costly medical treatments in other countries. Robert Page of MedRepublic says his company tries to lower those risks by helping patients talk directly with foreign doctors. We are trying to resolve those issues with the right kind of information to show that a doctor and a hospital in India, for example, offer the same quality as a doctor or a hospital in the United States. I'm Alice Bryant.
President Barack Obama has declared much of U.S. waters in the Arctic and some areas in the Atlantic Ocean permanently unavailable to oil and gas drilling. The Obama administration announced the action as the government of Canada took similar measures. Canada is placing a temporary ban on new oil and gas leasing in parts of the Arctic Ocean that it controls. Obama is using part of a 1953 law to ban leases for oil and gas drilling. Offshore drilling involves recovering oil or gas below the bottom of the sea. The law the administration is using says the President of the United States may, from time to time, withdraw from disposition any of the unleased lands of the outer continental shelf. The continental shelf is an area near land where the ocean is not very deep. Environmental groups hope the move will make it difficult for future presidents to change the ban. The Obama administration said the ban was an answer to environmental concerns. These include the importance of the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas to native Alaskans, and the risk that an oil spill presents to the ecosystems there. Some oil industry officials disagreed with the president's action. Dan Knotts of the Independent Petroleum Association of America said the ban would put the U.S. on a path of energy dependence for many years. He said that the U.S. instead should be a global energy leader. President-elect Donald Trump has promised to make major changes to how the U.S. produces energy. He has chosen cabinet nominees who are strongly opposed to Obama's environmental and climate change policies. Trump's election victory has put pressure on environmental groups and businesses that rely on tourism and fishing. Trump has said he wants to use all available fuel reserves to reduce energy imports. Jackie Savitz is a senior vice president at the environmental group Oceana. She says that the decision will help protect coastal tourism and fishing businesses from offshore drilling. She says that oil drilling provides smaller profits than supporters promise and can harm coastal life. What is not clear is how difficult it will be for future presidents to change Obama's decision. In 2008, President George W. Bush used a legal action to permit drilling on outer continental shelf lands. However, administration officials have noted that previous indefinite withdrawals are still in place. Lawmakers have had mixed reactions to the move. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey said that President Obama is putting the interests of millions of Americans ahead of oil companies. However, Utah Representative and Chairman of the House Committee on Natural Resources, Rob Bishop, says that the president is only trying to please special interest groups. "This is not a moral calling. It's an abuse of power," he said. The ban is one of several efforts Obama has made in recent months to leave an environmental legacy for his presidency. In August, the Obama administration announced it will increase the Papahanaumokuake Marine National Monument in Hawaii to 1.5 million square kilometers. This makes the monument the largest marine protected area in the United States. I'm Phil Dierking.
The ride-sharing company Uber has removed its self-driving cars from the streets of San Francisco, California. The action came after a dispute between Uber and state officials over whether the vehicles needed special permits to operate. Uber recently launched testing of its self-driving service in San Francisco. But shortly after the launch, California's Department of Motor Vehicles told the company to stop the self-driving vehicles. State officials said the Uber cars needed the same special permit given to about 20 other companies testing self-driving technology in California. But Uber refused to obey and kept its cars on the road in San Francisco. The company, which operates a transportation network around the world, is based in San Francisco. Uber argued that its technology does not make vehicles fully autonomous, so the special permit was not needed. It added that all of Uber's self-driving cars have a driver sitting in the passenger seat to take over if needed. The head of Uber's self-driving technology, Anthony Lewandowski, explained the company's position in a blog post. He said the self-driving Uber vehicles do use high-technology tools to assist drivers. But they are not fully autonomous and require a driver to be at the controls at all times. He compared the technology to solar car maker Tesla's advanced driver assist tools. Tesla's autopilot system allows its cars to steer in a lane, change lanes, and speed up or slow down based on nearby traffic. The company tells drivers that when using autopilot, they should still always be ready to take control of the vehicle. Vehicles equipped with these high-tech driver assist tools do not need a special permit to operate in California. It's hard to understand why the DMV would seek to require self-driving Ubers to get permits when it accepts that Tesla's autopilot technology does not need them, Lewandowski wrote. We asked for a clarification as to specifically what is different about our tech from the DMV, but have not received it. Uber and state officials were not able to come to an agreement on the issue. On Wednesday, the DMV said it had canceled the registration of Uber's 16 self-driving cars in San Francisco. All U.S. vehicles driven on the road require state registration. In September, Uber got its first U.S. approval to test self-driving vehicles in the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Uber continues to test the cars and give people the chance to experience the technology. San Francisco's mayor, Ed Lee, praised the DMV for stopping Uber's self-driving vehicles. He said he supports self-driving development and testing, but only under conditions that put human, bicyclist, and pedestrian safety first. There were several reports of unsafe incidents involving Uber's self-driving vehicles in San Francisco. Most involved witnesses claiming they saw Uber vehicles not stopping for red lights. Video of one incident was posted online that appeared to show a self-driving Uber car passing through a red light. Another person posted a photo of what she said was an Uber self-driving car in the road that did not stop for a red traffic light. In response, Uber said the video of the incident showed why its cars always require close attention from a human driver, and therefore do not need a state permit. Uber announced it would send the self-driving vehicles to the neighboring state of Arizona to begin a new test project there. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey reportedly said the state welcomed the cars with open arms and wide open roads. I'm Brian Lynn.
Thanks, Brian. Finally, here is Anna Mateo with her weekly health and lifestyles report.
We should all let the sunshine in as much as possible, and not just because it makes us feel good. Exposure to sunlight produces vitamin D in our skin. This is why we call vitamin D the sunshine vitamin. Vitamin D is good for everybody. In fact, research shows this sunshine vitamin could help women with breast cancer live longer. Breast cancer patients who have high blood levels of vitamin D have a better prognosis than women who don't. A prognosis is how quickly a doctor expects a patient to recover, or how long a doctor expects a patient to live. Researchers found that these women had less aggressive cancers. They were also 30% less likely to die from the cancer or to get it again. Researcher Song Yao led the study for the Roswell Park Cancer Institute. He said the study showed that high vitamin D levels improved the patient's prognosis, no matter what type or how advanced their cancer was. Besides fighting breast cancer, vitamin D helps the body in other ways. Most importantly, vitamin D controls how the body absorbs calcium. It also makes sure the body's immune system works normally. Getting enough vitamin D is important for normal growth of bones. If you don't get enough, you are at risk of developing osteoporosis, a disease that makes your bones fragile, brittle, or easy to break. Several studies show that vitamin D also strengthens the immune system and helps the body fight disease. Vitamin D may help reduce your risk of developing heart disease, according to a 2008 study published in the journal Circulation. And it may also help protect you against getting the flu. Other studies have shown that vitamin D might help people suffering from depression. But how do we get enough vitamin D? Factors in the environment may limit our exposure to sunlight, and therefore, vitamin D. These factors include pollution, using too much sunscreen, spending too much time inside, and living in areas with little sunlight. So, if you can't get enough sunshine, eat foods that are rich in vitamin D. Egg yolks, cheese, and fatty fish such as salmon, sardines, tuna, or mackerel. Some foods such as orange juice, yogurt, and cereals are fortified with vitamin D. They are also good sources. How much vitamin D you need is a debated topic. The best way to know if you need more vitamin D is to get tested by a doctor. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. You can find longer versions of the stories you have just heard on this program, along with transcripts, at our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are there, you can read, listen to, and download our programs. You will also find captioned videos and lessons to test your American English skills. We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also send us a message through our website. Please know that however you reach us, we do read every message you send. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. And be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every day of the year. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.